This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip Seed. Let's talk about markets.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
As you were saying, Xiaoning, the US markets really all in negative territory. The Dow was down 0.9%, S&P 500 down 1.3%, and led by tech depression, Nasdaq was down 2.1%. I think you saw a similar trend across to Asian markets, although a bit more mixed. Nikkei was down 1.1%, Hang Seng down 2.2%, Shanghai Composite up 0.9%, ST up 1.3%, but back home, FBM KLCI was down 0.1%.
Looks like we had a relatively okay day. Actually, I need to correct you. Shanghai remains closed. It remains closed for the whole week. It is Golden Week there in China, so they get a week off. Good for them. But for more thoughts on what's moving markets, we have on the line with us Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joe. Let's start with this Facebook outage. But I want to relate it back to the wider tech sector because, like I said earlier on, Nasdaq down more than 2%. Are investors using all this as an excuse to take money off the table because the Nasdaq did so well this year and even last year?
I think there's some profit taking. I think there's some issues around regulation of the tech sector. And then, but the biggest issue is just inflation. The Fed has been coming around to the fact that inflation is real. It's not transitory. It's going to take a while to work through. So we saw the bond yields back up, and that's bad for tech growth in general. So I think, investors are realizing inflation is going to be around for longer, higher bond yields, take some profits now in technology. And I think that's kind of like part of the rotation underneath the broader indices.
You know how are concerns over the debt ceiling issue in the U.S., because that hasn't been resolved yet at the moment, right? As well as the infrastructure bills that Joe Biden is trying to broker among his Democrats. How is that likely to affect markets in the immediate term?
Well, and we'll get the debt ceiling passed. There's a lot of gamesmanship going on, a lot of drama, debates, and so forth. The bigger issue for the markets is the infrastructure package, how big will it be? So you got to fund the government, pay the debt, Biden has these two big packages out there. I think what's going to be passed ultimately with the infrastructure bill, both the larger and the smaller, it's going to say $2.5 trillion. I think that's what the markets are pricing in right now. So, to me, the drama in Washington is I thought we were done with it heading into this in October, but apparently we got a couple more movies to sit through before we're over. But it'll be dealt with. We'll get an infrastructure package. It'll be smaller than the progressives want, and then we'll move on.
Meanwhile, there's a jump in demand for natural gas. I think it has caught many countries off guard. How do you think the current energy crisis will shape the investing framework for commodities in the short term, though?
Yeah, I mean, the current energy crisis, this is the last thing Jay Powell wants to deal with, talking about inflation, transitory nature of prices. It is quite interesting. You saw the rolling cutbacks in China, and you saw the problems in Europe, oil pressing up to 80 bucks here. It's political dynamite as well because, higher gasoline prices take away from the incomes of a lot of average U.S. households, kind of average in the sense of income. So this is something to watch very carefully. I'm not terribly, I don't think we hit $100 barrel and it stays there, but the higher oil prices go up, it does sap that underlying consumer spending. And consumer spending was very weak in Q3. That was due to the Delta variant. But there's a lot of expectations in Q4 that we're all going to go out shopping for Christmas and the holidays, but some of that shopping could be deferred because we have to pay more for energy.
Do you see this spill over to other commodities, this rise and spike in oil and gas?
I mean, we're long-term bullish on commodities in general because what's not being talked about is the fact that if we're going to go green, it's going to require a lot of fossil fuels. We just don't know. We just don't have renewable capacity for all the green that's out there, for all the demand that's out there. So there's a mismatch in the energy markets. We need the fossil fuels, and someone argued that we need the coal. India, China, they're kicking in the coal plants. So there's a mismatch. I think that mismatch in the demand and the supply as we shift from fossil to non-fossil is going to be a construct for a bullish super cycle in commodities across the board, oil, gas, particularly minerals that help drive, go into solar panels, electrical vehicles, and so forth.
But Joe, one metal that kind of stands out and hasn't had a good run is actually gold, which has actually declined almost close to 7% on a year-to-date basis. Can you explain why?
Yeah, it's simple. Gold is useless, right? I mean, you don't use it for anything. It's not silver, lithium, cobalt. I mean, it's a store of value, so to speak. It's just in the vaults and the banks. Where other copper, copper we need. We can't get enough copper. We need, commodities, whether it's rubber, so forth. You name it. I think that's kind of, even with this inflationary backdrop. And I think I would argue too that some of maybe Bitcoin, digital currency, has kind of stolen the thunder, so to speak, with gold flows and might have gone to gold. Maybe they're just going more speculatively into digital currencies. But gold has really no use when it comes to renewables or, the day-to-day manufacturing of goods.
Joe, don't tell that to the aunties in Asia, but I want to shift our attention to Merck because they have this experimental drug that's touted to be a game changer in the war against COVID. So do you see the sell-off then against vaccine-related stocks as we shift towards drugs and medication?
Maybe a one-off. I mean, it's great news, the Merck news, and it's just another, a weapon in our toolkit with COVID. But, when you look at the kind of the biggest, the big vaccination-related stocks, we're still going to need a booster here in the U.S. We've still got a long way to go to vaccinate the world. Then they got to get the booster. Then the variants are still out there. So, we're still in the pandemic. So I think vaccine-related stocks pull back here. But to us, healthcare in general remains very attractive. On a pullback, you want to buy them. But it's great news with Merck because we're one step closer getting out of the pandemic to the epidemic.
And meanwhile, on Friday, U.S. September non-farm payrolls come out. How concerned are you that the Fed and financial markets will look at these numbers and say, the labor issue continues to be a problem in America?
Yeah, that's a great question because remember in early September, a lot of these extended benefits from the federal government rolled off. And when they rolled off, people say, now I got to go get a job. It's just never that easy or that cleanly. So, if we get a number that's below expectation, maybe we're going to continue to think like, wow, there is a labor shortage. Maybe we can raise wages even higher to attract these workers. But, we can't base kind of the whole thesis off 1 month. But there's expectations that in September, more workers that were living off transfers were getting less transfers and now entering the labor force. If that comes true, then we've got a good solid footing for employment, income, wages, spending going into Q4.
Do you think employment figures will remain low for some time? Like, what's the trend in terms of unemployment numbers in the U.S. then for the next 1 year, sorry?
I mean, the employment numbers, I think we're headed back to where we were pre-pandemic levels, under 4%. We're missing the labor. It's just remarkable. I mean, it's a global phenomenon. So I think the unemployment rate continues to trend lower. We need more women back in the labor force, but that's hard. Some people are working remote. Some aren't. Schools are just reopening. So, I think we're not there yet. But in general, the employment market here in the United States is just super, super tight. And what do you want to do with that? To me, it just goes back to technology, automation, artificial intelligence, robotics. That is the best theme that we have looking forward 2 to 3 years. So any broad tech pullback by the guys that are buying and building robots, artificial intelligence, anything that substitutes, labor for capital. Because if we don't have the labor, we're going to rely more on the capital and the automation.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, ending this interesting conversation on about labor shortages in the U.S. and who benefits. It's actually the tech companies once again, because you'll be forced to actually implement more automation as time goes by. And I think we can also see this trend happening very much here in Southeast Asia. For Malaysia, the 12th MP says that foreign labor should be kept at 15%. Okay, fine. We aren't given the granular details on how we're going to achieve it. But if we are, I would assume many companies would be forced to also go down this path.
The cost would be very high from a restriction standpoint. But, another interesting analogy is the UK, where they say there was a shortage of gas. And they liken it to the lack of drivers to basically transport this gas to all the different petrol stations.
And but isn't that due to Brexit?
Exactly.
Because you didn't want to allow Europeans to work freely in the UK.
Absolutely.
So this is the outcome.
It is the outcome, essentially. I mean, there's also the talk about not enough licenses being distributed out as a result of the pandemic. But you're right, the Eastern Europeans that used to do the driving in UK, they decided, look, this doesn't work. Brexit, go back to East Europe. Now markets are recovering. They haven't got free-flowing labour markets in the UK. And so they basically bear the loss of lack of supply. So this is a challenge that, as you say, Shawnee, is an issue in Malaysia, where, as you say, the cap of 15%, I don't know whether that's practical.
I think, well, I mean, that's one solution that's been touted very much for increasing, wages, because that would probably shift employers to focus on high productivity jobs, right? But I think it's all down to the details and how it's going to be really worked out, because it's not like a linear shift. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.